Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Cheeky Natives. It's your girl Alma and I have the Tlhokgonolo by my side. And we have the author of a book that we think is our answer to the lack of literary erotica.
Yes.
On the market, written by a black girl. So for our live recording, we have the amazing Phumza Shabangu, who wrote the book Unspoken Truth.
I just want us, before we start getting into the book, right, to talk about how I initially read the book because, you know, I met Phumza on Twitter and I was like, okay, girl, I think your book is going to be spicy, so can I get a copy? It's like, no, fine, get a copy, I read it. And after I read it, I'm traveling to Cape Town and I'm like, listen, Alma, I've left your book in my house. You need to read it urgently. And how was your reading, babe?
Guys, can I tell you, I almost burnt the dinner. So it's my turn to make dinner. You know, your girl's on leave. I'm cooking. But I'm like, I start reading this book in the morning. So I'm like, yo. Even this dinner's holding me back. I'm like, you know, do these people have to eat today? Because now I'm busy with this book. These people don't have to eat. Your girl's sitting there. I'm absorbed in the book. I'm like, what is that smell? I've even forgotten.
That's a compliment.
I'd forgotten that I was cooking. I'm like, oh my God, I really hope my family's hungry so they can just eat this and not ask me questions about why the house smells some kind of way. And I think that's just a testament to how we couldn't put this book down. Like, and I know there are some people who are going to read this book. I was telling Tlhokgonolo that my recommendation is that you get yourself some birth control before you start reading this book, you know? Delete and block him first. Then read the book, because you might find that, you know, you'll be texting people you shouldn't be texting.
We've got quite a few results.
Phumza's book.
Yeah.
Phumza. All I'm saying is call a friend to call a friend to go and see their GP before they start reading the book.
No, Phumza, we just wanted to welcome you, obviously, on the Cheeky Natives. How are you doing on this lovely Sunday afternoon?
Saturday.
Yes.
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I mean, also, we'd like to give a big shout out to our resident book store,
yes.
Great books, because it allows us to do fantastic things.
Yes.
And obviously today we're also recording this episode in front of a beautiful live audience filled with black women, because black women support black women.
Yes.
So before we get into the book, we'd like you to just read firstly one scene and then we'll speak a bit, and then we'll ask you to read another scene. Okay. Can we ask you to read?
Sure.
Those of you who have your Bibles here, please turn to page 11. So that's the first word for the day. Before the pastor gives you the second part.
Okay. This is a scene after Ubongani has spoken to his wife. Mm-hmm. So on the phone. I hung up, collected my stuff, and walked out of the boardroom, prepared for the meeting. Tara had everything already set. After a few minutes, she came into the boardroom with three gentlemen and a lady. We all shared greetings and took our seats. As I lifted my eyes, they landed on some deep chocolate eyes with long eyelashes right across from me. Our eyes locked for a few seconds longer than normal. That was awkward. I thought and looked away. Mm. I cleared my throat and the introductions began. I found out that eyelashes across the table was the architect that we would be working with. His name is Gobani Beng. He would be responsible for bringing the two concepts together, meaning he would be working closely with both parties, my company and Tech Zone people, on separate occasions. After finalizing all the details, we concluded the meeting. We all stood and walked towards the exit. As we reached the door, they said their goodbyes and left, while Bengu was the last to leave. Just before he exited, he turned around and said, "It will be a pleasure working with you." Then he closed the door. After that, I went back to my office to prepare for my conference call, checked the stock market, and responded on some emails. But my mind kept drifting.
Drifter, babes. Drift away.
So we know at this stage in the book that Ubongani is married to Thando, who is a cisgender heterosexual woman.
Yes.
And
they are a power couple.
Yeah,
right?
They're happy.
Black love goals. Hashtag love
lives here.
Hashtag blessed. Hashtag my room.
No, they were. They were.
Relationship
like, I mean,
goals.
Hashtag.
We opened the book and yo, cool it. First sex scene in the book. Girl is just enjoying herself, you know? And you're like, okay, I'm ready, right? And then we get this encounter, the business associate, and now I was really intrigued, right, about like how, why you introduced them in that way. Like they could have met anywhere, like let's say the predominant sexuality story is people meeting at a club or some dingy places. But these people meet in a business encounter.
So maybe for our listeners who haven't read the book and who are going to go buy this book.
Because support black women.
Yes.
Post this. I get you all bought 50 Shades. So please do the right things. Just to set the scene. So the book is about this power couple who are black glove goals. Like, you know. And it's Bongani and No,
and Tando.
Bongani and Tando, please. Bongani and Tando first.
Tando
is bae. And they're this amazing couple. They married. They live in the Johannesburg northern suburbs. They're flourishing. You know, they're doing the thing.
Two children, you know.
Two children.
2.5 children. Picket fence. What? You know.
The pool. The OC. Everything. They're living, right? And then the story says that there's the introduction of this character who then disrupts their lives, you know. So, because you don't want to give away too much, people might still buy the book. But when he comes into the story and he disrupts things, and he disrupts you as a reader. Didn't you feel disrupted reading that book? So that's just to set the scene. And so basically, the story is just this narration of this relationship and the ways in which the relationship changes in
evolves.
The book, you know, and it evolves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to find out more, buy the book. Don't ask the author for a PDF.
Thank you.
So you introduce them in this business-like sense, right? Not in a club or a dingy setting. Why did you choose to particularly introduce the character in that way?
You know, firstly, I wanted to be... Firstly, thank you for having me, guys.
Tepo,
thank you for hosting us. You know? Firstly, I wanted to break the stereotype of reading. You know, we always, you meet wherever in a club and whatever. But for these characters, what I had in mind was that these are respectable people. You know, I want to break this stereotype to say, you know, being, you know, gay and whatnot is flamboyant or whatever. I wanted them to be as normal, you know, as possible and be successful in their own right and have their own things. No one lacked. If you look at Tando as well, she had her own thing because she didn't depend on her husband. She was
flourishing in Paris.
Yes. So I wanted to eliminate whatever things that would, you know, cause people to say, oh, she's staying because, or he's doing this because. So I wanted to eliminate all the reasons, you know. And I just wanted strong characters as well, both male characters that are dominant, that are strong, that are powerful in business. So that was my idea behind those two characters.
So what I was reading this book, and as it started, I was like, who will it? Like, first few pages, you're already like, okay, let me sit down and just gather myself. But I'm very curious as to what inspired the story, because you could have taken a very stereotypical way in telling the story, right? You could have just written it, and we could have all been rolling our eyes like, ah, okay, I saw this coming, but you didn't.
Yes.
And the characters felt very, very real. It felt like you were writing about people that we know. Like, I could be like, oh, this is my friend so-and-so. So I'm really curious as to what inspired the story.
So, you know, some people are like, they go as far as thinking it was me. I know I'm the Tando. And I'm like, no.
Are you the Tando?
Not that I know of, Pella. You know, you just examine. Look at Tando.
Look at Tando.
So I will not say, you know, I'm recorded here. But no, not at the moment. I've not been a Tando yet. But I want, when I tell my stories, I always want something different. Yes, you know, I think we think the same somehow, but I just want to be a bit different. I want to break, you know, boundaries that have not been broken before. I want to navigate territories that have not been, you know, navigated. So that's how I approach my writing. And I don't want to bore people. So when I feel like I'm getting bored myself as I write, then I pause. I'm like, because I'm also a picky writer. So I'm a reader, so I know from experience, from reading, because I've read before I started writing, I've been reading, so I know from experience what I like to read, and it must challenge me, it must challenge my thinking, it must challenge my way of life, it must just even my beliefs, everything that I read must challenge me. So that's how I approach my writing as well.
We're taking a short break.
Are you a Caribbean American? Are you looking for a podcast that truly speaks to your culture and identity? Look no further than Carry On Friends, the ultimate destination for all things Caribbean American, hosted by me, Carrie Ann. Dive deep into topics such as culture, heritage, and everyday life through the unique lens of the Caribbean American experience. You'll walk away feeling more connected to your roots. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts so you'll never miss an episode of Carry On Friends, the Caribbean American experience. Your Caribbean American community awaits.
You chose a very interesting genre to write. I think that this is, it's not, I dislike this title, Chick Lits. I really dislike the title Chick Lits because there's no guy lits, right? Yeah. And I mean, it also just reinforces the idea that unless women are writing about these intense issues, you know, then their writing is just superfluous. It's not anything serious, you know. But this is an interesting genre that you've written in because we don't have a lot of literary erotica that's written by black women with black characters, you know. So why, and I mean, it's also a little bit controversial considering how conservative South Africans can be about and sex, also, even though we know that people are having sex. I mean,
and
we can see it.
Linked to that is the culture that is attached to the book, right?
Yes.
So we're writing about Xhosa characters,
yes.
right? And taking into account what happened with Ingleba,
yes.
you know, the outrage
yes.
that happened.
Yes.
So, like, why did you choose to write this genre, having the information that you
that,
have about, you know, the South African market?
I love the challenge, but but at some point we have to change. We have to change our way of thinking. We have to change how we view people and how we view life. And it starts with us, the writers, the authors, how we narrate our stories. We can't stick to what we know, what we used to, what people perceive as normal. We have to go over and because reading challenges people, it makes people think, it makes people be more empathetic and be more aware and be more understanding. I think the time is gone for people to shy away from certain topics. We are moving, you know, I have kids and I want my kids to grow up in a society where they can be able to express themselves in however they want to. And it starts with us. It starts with us telling those stories and with the reading that people do read. And, you know, a few people I've interacted with along the, you know, they've written to me and said, you know what, Pumza, you've helped me, you know, I was afraid to come out, but you made it seem easier for me to, you made certain things I was afraid to be there for my sister or for my brother, you know, but now I'm stronger, I can be there for, so people came to me for different reasons, so it helps in a way in our society, and we need to write those stories that will help in our society.
And I think what's important about your book is the you know, I often think about Chimamanda's book, Half of a Yellow Sun, and how she humanized the people who were affected by the Biafran War, similar to Under the Odala Trees by Chinelo Paranta, right? And I think your book sort of humanizes the people, because we sometimes think that these people are doing these devilish things, you know, and that they aren't attached to a history, a story, a family, a profession. And I wanted to know, was that also the purpose, you know, trying to say, actually, the truth is, this could be someone that you're working with. This could be your husband. This
yes,
could be you.
Absolutely. It could be your son. It could be your husband. It could be, you know, anyone that you know and that you cross. They are normal people that live amongst us. This story is not far-fetched.
No. I mean, I spoke to one of my friends.
Happening.
I spoke to one of my friends because I was like, listen, you have to journey with me through these sex scenes, right? And he was like, hey, let me tell you a story. Simang Mang was with Simang Mang. And I was like, oh, maybe this is a real story.
But also, I mean, I think there's sort of a taboo that continues to exist around sexuality, and I think that cishet women also have to have this conversation with themselves, because you go onto Twitter and people are like, would you prefer it if your husband cheats on you with a woman or a man? And
would you date a
bisexual man? And reading this, for me, I also had to interrogate my own beliefs, right? And I was like, are we shocked at the fact that he's cheating on his wife? Mm-hmm. Or are we moved by the fact that it's a woman, that it's a man? Should we? Because then you also have to interrogate your own beliefs, right? So, I mean, the Clockenol and I were having a conversation about how fluid sexuality is, and we just haven't had this conversation. So, with Bongani, all his encounters had been with women. Yeah. So, it's not to say he woke up one morning and he's like, ooh, I'm over this. And he planned it, right? And that's what humanized the story for me, that maybe I just haven't met the woman of my dreams, you know? Like, you just, and it's true, and it's not a far-fetched thing to think of, right? Yeah. That maybe you just haven't met the woman of your dreams. Mm-hmm. And those are questions that I think your story sort of forced us to confront with ourselves. We had to ask ourselves those kind of questions. Are we shocked that Gobani's a man? And why are we shocked that he's a man? What is so particularly shocking in 2018 that Bongani could fall in love with another man, you know? And the question leading on to that is, why was sexuality such a central theme in the book? I mean, so infidelity comes up in the book, a lot of other themes come up, you know, but sexuality comes up often, mm-hmm. between the parents asking questions about Bongani, between Bongani asking himself these questions, his friends asking the same questions as well. So sexuality is very central in this book.
Yes.
Why did you decide to approach it that way?
Because as black people, it's not something we talk about. Mm. It's not something we're comfortable in talking about, you know. Even with our children, we're scared. Like, I remember when my daughter, you know, turned 10 and I realized that I needed to have certain conversations with her, it was not easy. And why is that? Because then she's gonna go out there and get all the wrong information. But then as I interacted with more adults, I realized that we are not sexually liberated. We don't know ourselves. We don't know, you know, some of us even marry the wrong gender because we no, it's true, because we don't know. We don't want to explore. We don't want to go in there. We don't want to have the deeper conversations with ourselves, with our families, and all of that. Mm. And why is it taboo? It's a natural feeling. Mm. It's something that, you know, if you are in love, then you have to experience it. This is how you show your love. This is how you show your intimacy. And then when it comes to homosexuality, you know, amongst us black people, it's horrible. Like, when you listen to the conversations, when you listen to the names, people go, like, it's you might be surprised what name calling is there, what the crucifications of people is there out there because of their sexuality, and people get killed because of it. Why is that? Because we are ignorant, because we don't know. You know, we don't want to learn. We don't, and no one is writing about it in our literature. Maybe in the international literature, people are writing, but in our South African literature, where we can relate and be like, oh, umkhumbuza lo baba wase next door, yazi uyamkhumbula lo bhuti waye soft, and then abantu bathi ngayo. Yeah, understand it must be relatable.
But I think also for me, I think what was intriguing but also quite challenging is. You know how you straddle this fluidity of sexuality? Because Bongani isn't a quintessential, I played with boys when I was younger, then I was like, oh my gosh, this is wrong, Christian, you know. It wasn't even a suppression, right? It was a non-realization, you know, and a discovery of sexuality. So I wanted to know in particular, like, we know what happens in the book, but I'm still like, what is Bongani? You know, what is Bongani?
He's Bongani.
He's gender fluid.
He's Bongani. He's a man.
And I think that's the important question to have, right? We tend to attach labels to people,
yes.
Right? So because we want to characterize people and interact with them this is how I interact with black women, this is how I interact with gay people.
Yes.
And now this book sort of shifts that, because Bongani isn't a, this is how I interact with gay people, you know? It's just a normal man, right?
Life,
I think we need to talk a bit about, like, the characters in the book, right?
Yes.
So we've got Uthando, right? Thando is a little complicated for me.
I have feelings about Thando, right? Yeah. And as like a as a black woman reading it, I just had some feelings about Thando. And I felt that initially I felt like Thando was getting a raw deal, right? I was like, yo, here's just another like story where a black woman just cannot catch a break, you know? And I mean later on in the book. Mm-hmm. Thando gets her comeuppance, which is great, right?
Thando's like how Stella got her groove back.
Thando flourishes, right?
She had to flourish.
And you don't even feel bad for her. You're like, yes, girl. Because, I mean, one of the stories in the book is how Thando almost flourishes but doesn't quite. And you're reading it and you even feel so disappointed. You're like, ah.
But you see that...
Kunza couldn't even try.
That Paris encounter where she meets... The character, because we introduced him later.
Yes.
I was like, I bet you they're going to meet again, these people.
Yes.
I bet you.
Yes.
So she for me,
flourish.
So for me, right, I mean, Thando is this strong black woman, you know, who actually has the resources to not stay in this relationship. Because we often think that we get told this narrative that women stay in these marriages that are less than great because they have to, because they don't have money, they don't have... Thando has all of these things. Her husband cheats on her. Mm-hmm. She still then decides that she wants to stay and fight for this marriage, you know, which feels almost counterintuitive, right? Because you're like, this woman has it going on for her. She could walk out of the streets and find somebody else. And I'm curious as to why you decided for Tando's character, because she really falls apart. It's like, Thando just is a mess, you know, in the book. Why did you take that route for Thando?
But just imagine it though, Alma. This came out of nowhere.
Mm.
Like, you are literally there in cloud nine.
Mm.
Hey, you're ready. What's very present? You're going to step into your husband's office.
You are
voila.
Killing the like, game. Say speed to the gods.
I think being blindsided like that won't do that to anyone, no matter... If whether you are a man or a woman, no matter how strong you are, because it was literally the bursting of her bubble. She didn't see it coming, like literally she did not see it coming, and then so she had to go through those emotions, and she had to. And I know for me, I think for most women the first instinct is to fight. You know, when something like that, we fight, you defend. Mm. And then until you realize, you know, some situations, they're not worth the fight.
But she did fight, though, right? Or in all fairness, she was like, listen, I'm giving you an ultimatum.
Yes.
I'm going home for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, if you don't fetch me, I know.
But that was problematic to me, right? That you cheat on me, then I give you the option to choose me, right? So there's, it's not like she said, okay, I'm choosing to stay with you.
Yeah.
She said... I'm going, I'm taking all of my things,
mm-hmm.
I'm going home, and you can decide to follow me. Like, so, we often, I mean, for me, it was just interesting, because you often think that, you know, this woman who has it going
it
on,
you'll
leave. You won't necessarily think twice about it, but I found it really humanizing, because I think that we're very harsh towards women who stay.
Yeah.
I think that, as a society, we're very harsh towards women who stay. We're like, this woman is so weak, she's so dumb, how can you do all of these things? Thando is none of those things. Thando is a high-achieving career woman, she's beautiful, she has it all going for her, and she still chooses to stay in this. So it makes
but
you as the reader question.
I think also what was important for me is to talk about the complexities of love, right?
Yes.
So we don't talk about like that these people were together for a very long time, you know, effectively each other's first love.
Yes.
And what that means for a woman like Thando.
Correct.
To be like, well, maybe my husband's infidelity is just a one-time thing. Because also for her, that was that. It's like, just a moment of weakness. Let's get it on. He's going to get his act together.
And
right?
Knowing the type of man he is.
Yes.
You know this man, how
exactly.
He is. He's loving. He's kind. So this is out of courage. So you're thinking, maybe it's just... You know, a distraction that...
But there's also a little element of Bazo Tsinaband.
Obviously.
Like, in reading
there's
that book, I was like, there was an element of...
There's always that.
Bazo Tsinaband, because, I mean, now she must go home.
You know, the
home.
Top billing wedding she had in
like,
her family.
But also her family.
Yeah.
Also, we must talk about the parents.
Yes.
Because Thando's mom and Bongani's mom, when they rush in there and they're like, what's happening? What did he do?
Yes.
You know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like also, I think for Thando, it's the family that she comes from, right?
Mm.
So she comes from this family where she was raised well. She meets this loving husband who is caring, blah, blah,
and
blah.
And families are connected.
And they're connected,
they
yeah.
So it's more
and
than
now,
just them.
It's like, baby. You can't do this because our families are together, right?
But the explanations as well, right? Because people will talk. I mean, we can, I think that we can try and be like, no, she was going to be fine. But people are going to want to ask you, you had this amazing top billing wedding, we all saw it, you know, there's an element of people going to say, so what happened, mm-hmm. you know, why did you get divorced? Mm-hmm. And irreconcilable differences will not necessarily be they enough for some people, you know. So I think Thando was also thinking about that, that there's ramifications of this divorce that extend so much further than just mm-hmm. the two of them, you know. Mm-hmm. They had these two children that they have to think about, that this whole life that they've built together, you know. There's a public image that accompanies Thando and Bongani. So now how do we account? I mean, he didn't, there's no backstory. Nobody saw them fighting in the streets. Yep. There was
came out of nowhere. Mm. And also you must think, sometimes, you know, as women, it's with the marriage failure, it's, we take it personal as if it's, you know, it's my fault, you know, it's I could have done something, I could have. So I think it's the, we are wired that way to try and save for the sake, you know, we have that Begazela mentality, you know, pounded on us that, you know, you fight. So I think that's a first instinct, because it's something that you come from. And now when you know, it talks about the families they come from, they were married the longest time, they are heavy, they seem heavy. So now to be the first one in your family to have it divorced. So I think that was, you know, where Thando came from with that instinct, says I must fight obviously for my kids. And
I mean, I have some mixed feelings about Bongani, right? So in the end I'm like, yes, black man flourish in love. Yes. But I'm challenged, because when Thando gives Bongani the 2 weeks, wow, now I think, you know, the nigga is going to get himself right
together
every day. Every day, she's with the lover every single day, and I'm like, hold on. So, what is it that you want? Do you want your wife, or do you want this person?
But it also speaks to this selfishness for me. I think Bongani had some selfishness that he personally didn't want to
own up
to confront. Yeah. You know, because he wanted to be like, oh, this happened later on. But I mean, he just wanted to be like, this thing happened to me, I had no agency, I don't know how it happened. One minute my clothes were off, you know. And I'm like, there were so many steps involved in that, you know. And for me, he's one of the most selfish characters in the book for a lot of reasons. He strings Gobani along, knowing that initially he has no intention of leaving Uthando. Mm-hmm. So he wants Gobani there, he wants Gobani to shower him with all of this love, but he's unable to take the steps that are required, right? Then he's with her, then he makes this decision that I'm going to be with my wife, you know, this was just a one-time thing, I don't know what came over me, midlife crisis, whatever he told himself, you know. Then he's with his wife and he's still making his wife unhappy. So everyone's unhappiness is centered on Bongani, you know. But Bongani gets to be the one who's going through the motions, he's going through the most, he's crying. And I just felt like, this man is so selfish, like, take some ownership.
You remind me of so many, because when the story started, I started on Facebook, the backlash that I had, and you remind me of so many comments that, you know, came on my
inbox. It's selfish. And I mean, it's selfishness in the sense that I can understand the complexity of having to deal with this idea of who you've always thought you are and finding out that you're not. But I think that when you're in a relationship, even be it with your wife or your side or whoever, there are so many repercussions that, and it speaks to this idea that even in our relationships, black men get to be allowed to find themselves, have the self-discovery, make mistakes, and we must be forgiving. So when I was reading this book, I'm like, had the shoe been the other way around, would he have been okay with sitting for 2 weeks while Thando decides, right? Yeah. Because when Thando has her moments of weakness, Bongani's reaction is very, like, clinical and very cold, and it's not what he expected from Thando, you know? So for me, it speaks to that. It speaks to how black men have so much room, even in relationships, you know? He can have a child outside of the marriage, he can find himself, he can come back 5 years later and say, sorry, I was just going through things, right? And no, everyone will be like, no, men, he just needed to grow up. He just needed time to grow up. That same grace is not extended to black women, you know? But so if Thando had done that, the conversation would have been completely different.
I'm on another story in that angle.
I'm ready.
Also, men like Bongani are very dangerous, right? I'm speaking from a queer perspective, who you dabble with these men who are trying to find themselves, right? Yeah. And then you're like, Mandy, Mandy, you know, someone is sleeping, whisper sweet nothing, you see. And then next thing, you know,
with the wife.
Tomorrow you're like in a shop and you see a wife and a child. And you're like,
two children.
Hold up. What's happening? Like, this is the same man last night who was doing unspeakable things to me. And now today, stand up. So, like, I think Bongani's character for me was also talking about these, let's call them DL men, but also men who who, because of the hegemonic toxic masculinities, are staying in these cisgendered relationships,
so
but not necessarily wanting to, right?
Absolutely.
So for me, Bongani was also like a moment of like, aha, I know you.
Yeah.
I know you.
Yeah.
You are dangerous.
You are dangerous.
Because what you're going to do is you're going to string someone along and be like, oh, actually, this is not for me, right? And then, and Bongani, unlike so many other men, ends up at a happy place, right?
Yes.
Many of these men still stay in their relationship, still after a moment of weakness, want to have another child. After moments of weakness, another child, you know? Because they're trying to fix themselves, right?
But Bongani also made me think of, you know how we always tell ourselves, someone will do something to you and you're like, karma is going to get this person. Sometimes karma doesn't get the person. And that's okay.
It's
actually, sometimes karma misplaces that person's address. And it's actually okay. And for me, that was the also an interesting conversation, right? Because, you know, you'll sit with your friends and you're like, he'll never find someone like me again. He'll never be happy without me.
And
Ugai is going to be in the Maldives. And he's going to be happy. And for me, that was also an interesting aspect, right? Because we often, I mean, that's always, your friends will consider you like that.
Yeah,
they'll be like, ngingaphinda yeah, ngithole ofana nawe.
Uzobuya.
Uzobakhala, mneke, mnike 3 months. I mean, 3 months, And so for me, it just made me rethink, you know, all of these conversations that we have with ourselves about, like, what karma and what justice looks like. Because you can argue that Bongani was one of the most problematic characters in the book, but out of everybody, Bongani flourished the most. Like, even when he was being problematic, there was always someone who was going to be like, Zin, I still love you.
Yeah.
Someone in the book was going to love him. And for me, it was an interesting thing to think about, because we often don't think about that. You know, you often just think people do bad or messy things to other people, and they're a bad person, firstly. Even that's not necessarily always true. But that then that person is also gonna have bad things happen to them, because that's just how the world
always
is.
Yeah.
But no, they'll flourish.
But also, like, I'm thinking about, like, the friendships in the book, right?
Yes.
So you know, couple things, regard with friends, blah blah blah, whatever. And for me, I thought Des was an interesting character for me. Because Des was like, you know, I want to be there, but also you hurt this woman, but I want to be there. Also, I want to understand you. And I felt that there was a sort of grace that Des allowed Bongani, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, he was holding him accountable, and I really enjoyed the Des's character, because he was holding Bongani accountable to be like, look, what you did is pretty messed up.
Yeah.
You need to own to what you did. Yeah. But also, brother, tell me, what is happening? What is happening? What is happening? Like, what is going on? Has this always been a thing? Like, I want to know. And I felt that sometimes we don't extend the same form of grace that Des extends to Bongani, especially in male friendships, right?
Yes.
Well, it's the other way. It's like, my friend, you can cheat as long as she doesn't know, right?
Yes.
But I thought there was a whole of, like, accountability about, like, stop being fakie, but also, what is your truth?
Yes. You know what? When I created these characters, okay, I'm a lover of love. So I want, you know, happy people. So maybe that comes out in my. But my idea of friendship is someone who will call you into order and say, you know what, you have messed up. They must be accountable. Someone had to tell Ubongani, you know what, you messed up and you must be accountable. And there was friendship. It was not just Bongani's friend. They were all friends. Because sometimes, it's a couple things. And sometimes you find yourself in that you don't know whether now to be on the wife's side or the husband's side, because you were all friends. And in that case, then you don't take sides. You just, you know, you offer the advice where you can, and you offer a shoulder where you can. I wanted Des to be that, you know, that neutral person as well, because they have have been friends, all of them together. There was no, this is, you know, Bongani's friend and whatnot.
So the inverse for me is, where were Thando's friends? Like,
Thando, I think that's why she felt lost, because I made her not to have the friends, because they met when they were young, and when you're young, I know, talking from experience, when you marry young, you know, friends go, you know, they fall off on the wayside. You tend to be in a bubble with your husband, and now, because you married young, your friends are still single, and now your life is not in sync with the single. So it's also a lesson also to us as women to say, you know what, when you're married, it doesn't mean now don't have friends, because Thando literally didn't have anyone to talk to. I think that's what drove us, you know, almost crazy, because she had no one to talk to, because the best friend and the person that she was always talking to was the one who hurt her the most. So it's a lesson, you know, have friends, have people outside this relationship that you can go offload, but trusted friends is difficult to have.
It was an interesting comment, and it's a conversation I had with a friend recently about how women are almost conditioned to prioritize their romantic relationships, you know. So women are the ones who get taught that your husband must be your best friend, you know, you're the one that will describe him as your better half. There's very few men that I've heard use that kind of term. You are my better half, you are my best friend, you are the love of my, you know, all these things, right? That center these.
Y'all are meeting the wrong men.
But you hardly ever hear men use that kind of language. There isn't an expectation on men to call his wife his best friend.
They're still friends with their long-term.
So, and that's the thing. And men don't get conditioned to prioritize romantic relationships. So you often find that with women, I mean, I was saying this to my friend, that like, sometimes as women, we must also evaluate our friendships, right? So you will ditch your friends, you know, or you'll be the friend that doesn't come to your friends' things. You'll just be problematic. But when it's your problematic boyfriend, you will always
be there.
You are the one pulling out the chairs, but you never come to your friends' events, you know? And it just speaks to the ways, the relationships that we place value on, and the relationships that we're conditioned to place value on, right? So Bongani has a thriving social circles. He's got Daisy, has all of these friends. Thando doesn't have one friend that she can call when things fall apart that she can trust. Not one. And I mean, she
did a couple things.
But he didn't. He still had Daisy. He had a friend to call. And for me, that was the start of a conversation. Like, there's a whole conversation to be had about how women navigate their friendships. Because her instinct is to be like, they're going to talk about me, they're going to laugh at me, they're going to do all these things. Bongani in his friendships is just like, Des, you know, this happened. He's in the room.
Yeah.
It's awkward, but let's move on. So it is also about the conditioning of women, right? And the ways in which we get taught which relationships have to take precedence. Like, you're not a good wife if your husband is not the center, you know, if you don't speak to the head because you are the neck, then you're not a good wife, you know.
I mean, that's true. We have to talk about the third character, who I think is my favorite character in the book.
Yeah.
Like, my heart. No, because like, you know, here comes this and I can see him, yummy dreaming man. You know, chocolate eyes.
And long lashes, long lashes, Mr. Lashes.
And also just like, for me, it was also like, what I really liked about the book is that each character had their own story, right?
Yes.
So you didn't have a main character in the book. Each person had their main story.
Yes.
And Coco's story for me, it's like the relationship that he had with his mom was really like touching for me, you know? Just the fact that, you know, his mom was like, my son, whatever makes you happy is fine with me. Mm-hmm. And then he meets this trashy Bongani.
Nice trash. Trash.
You have half of the women that are going to kill you
here.
Put him in coconut oil.
I mean,
trash.
For me, I think I was really heartbroken when at the end of this beautiful 2 weeks flight to Cape Town, Omonate, it's like, actually, you know what, I am going.
That was heartbreaking.
And then he's miserable in this thing, right? Mm. He's miserable in these things, and he's like, yo, I need to find him. Now he terrorizes the mother, terrorizes Ryan, terrorizes...
Yes.
Because Bongani must get what he wants.
Yes.
Right?
Selfish.
And he doesn't,
selfish, trashy.
And he doesn't think about the hurt that he's causing. That for a man to want to leave the place where he knows his family, his friends, his work, and leave to another country because he doesn't want to be in the circle.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, for me, like, I was just like, yo... Wow.
I had to make him look good. Pella, he had to look good. Because it could have gone either way. People, you could have hated it, like you came and broke, because that's what we tend to do when someone from the outside comes to break the marriage.
I think that this
that was my.
Because you know, Tobani also for me was one of the bravest characters in the book, because Tobani walks in his truth. He says, "Listen, this is how I feel about you, but other people's husbands have never been my portion.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep it moving." But it's a complexity of characters, right? Because, you know, you always think that the side is this bad person who is just no morals, you know? A person of poor morals, you know? Yep. You know all the stories that you get told about the side. So they're a person of poor morals. They're this homewrecker. They came here to ruin your marriage. But there's a complexity. There's a whole other person that exists in that, right? Outside of your own feelings. Because Tando had her feelings about them. But Tobani is ultimately a good guy. Like, he's a good guy who gets caught up in a very...
I want you.
It's a complexity. And I think you make Tobani such a complex character, you know?
But also lovely and nunus and very dreamy.
Yeah. And very sweet. And very kind. And consistent.
My favorite, actually.
I think...
Yeah, I really, really like
Just Tobani. To give you a taste of, like, you know, Tobani's... Sukunas. Well, Pumzatu, just read from here.
On page 36.
Page 36, if you have your Bibles. Just to, you know, start you up about
to give me that thing.
What gets us moving.
Gosnat NJ Dewey. Go close your ears. Tobani. Listen. Tobani. We both spoke at the same time. I like the sound of my name from your lips, he drawled. Tobani, this is not appropriate. I'm married, for God's sake. I have a family and I'm definitely not gay. I'm not sure who I was trying to convince. He moved closer with his eyes locked on mine. He pressed the lock button. I moved backwards until I couldn't anymore. He put both his hands on the wall, caging me in. In that instant, I was bombarded by his smell, which didn't do justice to my already overloaded senses. It was intoxicating. I could feel myself growing hard. I'm going to kiss you again, he whispered.
Yes.
Before I could respond, his lips were on mine. They felt heavenly. My knees buckled. I pulled at his shirt as he grabbed me by the neck. He moved closer as I felt the evidence of his arousal, and his dick was as hard as mine.
Okay.
When they rubbed against each other through our clothes, my word,
It
was electrifying.
Yes.
It felt like jolts of electricity zipped throughout my body and then pulled straight back to my already hard arousal. He groaned and pushed his knee between my thighs. He was doing wonders with his lips, with his tongue insistent against lips demanding entrance. The knee movement had brought our hard dicks together, and the friction was amazing. My hips barked as I kept feeling the evidence of his arousal against mine. I gasped, allowing him access into my mouth. The pleasure intensified. I needed more. I placed my hands on his back and moved him closer to me. We were like one body. You couldn't tell where one ended and the other began. I felt a tingling sensation from my scalp down my spine to my engorged erection. I exploded. My husband was
like I said, visit your GP before you leave. There are going to be a lot of unspoken truth inspired babies.
So now, personally, I would like to know, what sex are you having, my sister? That is electrifying, because, like, in the first 40 pages, there are about 6 sex scenes, and every single one of them is lit. I'm like, no,
this is how I burnt my family's dinner. I just want to say, this is how my family's dinner was burnt. I was reading Punza's book.
So, and I burnt the rice. So the question is really like...
It's been burnt rice.
I burnt the rice.
tell us about the sex scenes here. The sex scenes in this book for me are just very visceral, right? And visceral in a good way, you know. Like, I was moving around, you know. I was even messaging some people to be like, my sister, call the cops.
But also the way that you write about it is so, I want to say realistic, that you can imagine this. It doesn't feel like, if you've read something like 50 Shades, where you're just like, yeah, right, okay, sure, that happened, you know. This felt very realistic. You can imagine that this happened, you know.
I imagine it.
Okay. Tell us more. Well, then.
And I imagine it, and I imagine doing it, and then whatever I'm imagining and I'm feeling, then I put it in writing. So as I'm physically involved when I'm writing this thing, that, you know, yeah.
So I want to know, because like the homoerotic sexual encounters in this book, might I say, are very accurate. Ooh. So okay. I would like to know.
I mean, okay.
I can research, you guys. I would like to know, did you do research before writing this book about like what exactly goes into homoerotic sexual encounters?
Yes, I did. I spoke to people that were kind enough, you know, to open up, and because I've always like, if I know, I want to know how's the sex life, and you know, people talk to me because I'm that open.
So is that what happened? Hang out because you might write it in our next week.
So we talk, and also I read. Mm-hmm. I find out what is it that's pleasurable for, you know, between a man and a man, they find pleasurable. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the emotions, I think they come from me, how I feel when, you know, someone touches me this way or when someone does this way. But yeah.
But can we also talk about Bongani being too eager for the sex? There's a moment where I was like, hey, Bongani, no.
But what does too eager mean?
No, he was ready. He was like, you know, when is it happening?
He had 2 weeks to flourish. Do you think he was going to waste a day or two to be like,
and he had already tasted, you know, on the left and how good it is. So he wanted to
elevate
it. Were you going to wait forever to find out, knowing that you have
been waiting?
Nah, I'm a good Christian, so I was going to wait for marriage.
I mean, there was no Steve Harvey 90-day rule here. He had two weeks.
He needed to do everything and experience everything. And in his mind, you must know, he thought he was just going to do this and go back to his wife.
The luxury.
And emotions involved in the sexuality.
I want to talk about Kwezi. Crazy.
Also, Crazy is also someone that I want, actually. Because,
yeah.
You just want everyone.
Crazy. So, I mean, when it first started, I was like, Crazy is such a douche. Like, you know, you meet Crazy and you're like, Crazy is so irritating, you know? I'm just like, okay,
how
girl.
You know,
so there's someone in our audience who's fanning themselves, right? Which maybe explains why Tando felt the way that she did about Kwezi, right? Because Kwezi is really irritating when you meet
different
him, you know?
Bongani.
He's very different from Bongani. Mm-hmm. He's brash, he's rude, he offends her. I mean, how do you offend someone you've just met? He offends her. Mm-hmm. He just says something, I'm like, you know, you should have just poured water on him, like when he started, you know, because he was just being annoying. But then you get to see a different side of Kwezi, you know, you start to...
When he cooks, and he starts cooks, to be drawn to taste.
And he's there for her, right? Because you realize that she's socially isolated, she doesn't have friends, this is not something that she can talk about to with her mother, you know, I mean, where is she going to start this conversation? But Kwezi is there for her, and he's like the most unlikely character in the book. But when it ends, I didn't feel sorry for him. I was just like, Tando needed to get what she needed to get.
Yeah.
And
we just take
ended.
A moment to talk about the hiking? So they go on the hike.
Yes.
Because you know what?
You did not miss
Kwezi,
a thing, eh?
Kwezi is helping Tando.
Yes.
Tando came on got the hormones were too much because she wasn't getting any.
Yes.
So she was just like, I'm a grab
this
man.
From, like,
so you know what?
I
like Tando. In that minute, I was like, Tando, get what is yours.
She had to.
She was just like,
she
I guess she let them say, sit on it.
But the way it ends is really heartbreaking for me, right? The way it ends is really heartbreaking for me because I'm like, I've grown to like Kwezi. I mean, first I thought he was a douche. Then, you know, you go through the feelings. You're like, I mean, he's not so bad. He's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you're feeling the emotions as it goes by. And the way it ends for me is really abrupt, you know. So, and I feel like...
You wanted to...
Oh, I feel like Bongani gets his beautiful fairy tale ending. Mm-hmm. He gets the love of his life. Kwezi meets this guy. And then she's like, actually, putting Yabong. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, delete and block. So, you know, and I felt that ending was... Why did you bring him back? So my real question is, why did you then allow him to come back? Because he's not really the nicest character, you know? Yeah.
But I think before that, I think for me, what I really enjoyed about Ukwezi and Tando's encounter was the complexity of love again, right?
Yeah.
So I think that the reason why it couldn't continue was that Tando was feeling guilty for having feelings for another man because she was so devoted to Bongani.
Even after he left her.
And I think that she was like, no, this can't be. Mm-hmm. And also it can't be with Kwezi because of how it started.
Yes.
So, you know, she wanted Freddy to
But also because Kwezi doesn't fit the mold, you know?
Yeah.
So Bongani, in a lot of respects, ticks the boxes. Like, Bongani's that guy, when you talk to your friends are like, yes, girl. Yes, Seven's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But Kwezi's not that guy. Like, your friends are not listening to you speak about Kwezi and be like, ooh, and who writes Kancha? And he's just like, your friends are like, it's a
sex book. No, but I think also what I did that, because I wanted them at least to fun, because you must remember Quez was also going through his emotional fighting for their child. So they needed that time to find themselves, both of them, and time apart to definitely know what they wanted. I didn't want to bring their story in because I felt that it was going to be like, you know, like, whoa, this is too much now, so many stories in one. So that's why I didn't go into detail with their discovery, their self-discovery and stuff.
And then, damn, thank
but
you,
that scene,
happy ending.
Yes.
That scene where was unlikely for him, but it also speaks to just how unlikely life can be, right?
Yes.
Because then Bongani and Tobani are, you know, getting their fairy tale ending, which is great for them.
Yes to black queer love.
Yes, that's what's great for them. Because Bongani, he starts being trashy and he just gathers himself, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But then the person who then finds Kwezi again for Uthando is Tobani, and I just found that whole turn of events so interesting, right? Mm-hmm. That Tobani would be the
Tobani is the one.
He's a
one.
Like he's
he wants everyone to be happy. He's like, you know, I have my happy ending. You can have your happy ending.
And he was kind as well. Like hence I'm saying I wanted him to be loved. I didn't want him to be, you know, that homewrecker that was hated. I wanted his character because I was in love with him.
He was such a good
And I think also what's important for me in the telling of the story is like how like black families don't always have to be dysfunctional, right? So the divorce happens between Tando and Bongani, but there's an integration of like, this is how we're going to make it easier for the children, and this is how we're going to coexist.
Doesn't
right?
have to be Peter.
I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the fact that in the end everyone got their happy ending and it was one big family, right? And for me, like, you know, I haven't read stories in a long time that have happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when this story ended, I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Everyone gets what they want. Everybody's happy. And I really appreciated that because, like, we don't find a lot of... And I think also it can be realistic, right?
Yes.
So it's not a fictional thing.
Yes.
It can be realistic. Yes. Like we can work these things out.
But
you
also
can
that
work through these issues and lay down the, you know, the rules. It doesn't, you know, when you separate, it doesn't mean that it's the end of everything.
Yes.
It's the end of that family that you have built.
Yes.
And if you put your priorities right, it can be done. Like it's been done.
But I also I enjoyed that the characters in this book were allowed to feel the full range of the emotions, you know.
Yeah.
So Tando's allowed to feel angry, she can feel hurt, because I think that sometimes, especially for black women, there isn't room to do that, you know. Something traumatic happens to you, you must wake up, you must go
fight.
To work, you must fight for your marriage, you must just keep it moving. There's no room for you to fall apart and be a mess, because somehow it's a reflection on your character or your weakness or your inability to cope, right? And in the story, you just see Tando go through it. And it's realistic. You don't feel at any point in the story that Tando is weaker because she was drinking wine and just, you know, having midday lunches, not going to work. It's realistic. It's she was feeling these things, and there was room for her to feel those things. And I thought it was so powerful to see this black woman going through it, right? Yep. And without there being a family meeting, no one was calling uncles to come and speak to Tando, to come and fix things. You know?
Besides those mothers.
Those two mothers. Are overbearing mothers.
But the mothers for me were interesting in the sense that you would think, you know, stereotypically, you'd think that the man's mother
will be the one
defending her son. Mm-hmm. He's such a good person. And she was a ride or die, right? Mm-hmm. To the end. You know, she was like, tell us what he's done to you. There was a sense
she was ready, eh?
Exactly. Yeah. There was a sense
Even him being introduced to the mother. The mother was the cold one.
Yes.
And, you know,
there was
like,
a sense of community.
Give me time. I had this makoti for years that I love. And now you
And now you just like suddenly.
But also it's speaks to, you know, how the relationship is with the in-laws, because it's not just maybe the person you married to that you bond with. You bond with everyone. Yes. So when that break happens, allow everyone to go through their emotion and to grieve as well, and to, you know, place themselves to, okay, now that but divorcile, where do I fit in?
I loved his father. His father is
Chama Baba.
He's this Xhosa man. I mean, the walk that they take on the beach, you know, where he's like, let's talk, son. And the walk that they take on the beach, right? Because I think we often hear about coming out stories, and I hate the idea of coming out.
Yes.
Because no straight person ever comes out as straight, you know. But he has this conversation with his parents about Tukobani and how the marriage has not worked out. And I mean, his mom was just like, Lord Jesus, this is too much for me. I'm going to go drink my tea and keep it moving. But his father, who is this Xhosa man that you would think is so stereotypical, you know, is going to be harsh.
Xhosa folks are going to kill me.
Is the one who takes him under his wing and has this real conversation. I mean, and they even have a quip at the end, and he's like, oh, so how was it? And I'm like, oh.
Sometimes you gotta know.
And I mean, it's funny because you're just like, they don't want to talk about sex with their parents. That's just, and that was such a, it really, for me, it was just, our stories often are just like about sadness and hard times.
Yeah.
And here was this story where there was just joy. His parents, because he'd been so worried about how his parents were going to accept him or how they're going to react. Mm-hmm. And he comes into the space, and his father was this traditional man, is the most accepting and the most understanding person in the story, as it should be.
But the MVP in the story is Tobani's mother.
Yo,
the MVP.
Yeah.
That woman, we deserve her. The MVP in the story is her. Like, even after, they had the conversation about this man and how hurt this man is, Bongani rocks up this, like, Mama, yo, diamtanda, da 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 da. And this woman is just cautioned, like, do not hurt my son.
Yes.
You know, here is the number. Flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they meet later on again, it's just like, I was just like, where are these black women? I want to meet these black women.
We're raising these black women.
Yes.
This is the type of women that
yes.
we need to be. We have, I think half of us in this room have kids that, you know, when they come to us with things like that, we are in a place where we can build them and help them and, you know, to navigate, you know, these uncharted territories. Instead of breaking them down, we are there with, we are the rocks that need to, you know, carry them up. So we
can see, obviously, from our babbling that we've really, really enjoyed your book. So, I mean, we're a literary podcast, so it would be remiss of us to just stop this conversation without asking who are some of the readers that you're reading, right? What is on your bedside table? What is a book that changed your life? Those type of questions.
I used to enjoy, I remember I was going back, I enjoyed Hamlet by Shakespeare.
Oh, wow. Hamlet. Wow.
I never
expected
it.
I was so young then that there was a character there, the name was, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce it right, but I was young, and everything we were taught in school was in Xhosa. Yeah. So, but the name was Ophelia. So now I decided that I love this character so much, I changed my name. At school, I write in my books, my mother comes, because I was staying with my grandparents, my mother comes back, sees my, what is this nonsense? I've changed my book, from now on I'm going to be Ophelia. She was livid, like, I gave you a Xhosa name, you go and get an English name. But I don't even like. I don't even remember. But that book for me, I think that was the first English book that I enjoyed.
We just never explained it.
Hamlet.
I was young.
Also, the canon of African literature was a mess.
Nothing. So yeah, but now currently I'm enjoying the ones with purpose. I haven't finished.
Yo. My sister.
Stay tuned for the podcast.
The ones with purpose.
We will let you know. It will be live.
Yeah. The ones with purpose was absolutely an incredible book for me, and I think personally, I lost my mom last year.
Yeah.
And journeying through, the journey that Annelie takes about grief and about funerals was really feeling seen, right? So reading a book where people who look like you go through experiences that are like yours. Yes.
And also, like, for me, I'm the oldest, So when her sister was going through, I'm like, these are the oldest problems. Like, when you are the oldest girl child,
you experience these things.
And she wrote about it in such an honest way. I spoke to other oldest children, and they were like, yeah, girl, this is us. And I mean, that's so powerful that my mom read that book, and my mom was like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, and books that cross generations like that are powerful books. And I think
it is.
No Sizwe is that right time.
It is. I think it's beautiful. And I could relate as you did because I also lost my mom. So some of the things you're like, oh, yes, this is what I like. It's so real. And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
And what is next for you? Like, what can we... What is next for you? Are you writing anything new? What are some of the projects that you're working on?
I'm writing a sequel to this one, which is Ravaged Souls.
Ooh, is it more sexy?
Yes.
Me, I'm here for the sex.
Me,
I am here for the sex.
Before we have an unspoken truth, Chiki Natsu's baby.
I think we're gonna have twins this side.
My sister, I rebuke.
So yeah, I'm busy with that. I've picked one of the characters. Bongani and Gobani will not feature as much. Those that are, yes, they are there, but in the background, they are not. Okay. Yeah.
So it's Tando's story.
It's Ryan's story.
Ryan, yes, Ryan. I'm ready. Ryan, I don't have a let's sex Gabona. I already see it. Ryan has gone through too much to not be having good sex.
Yeah. So it's Ryan's story and the pastor's kid. So yeah.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Okay. Hey, PKs are dangerous.
So we're gonna ask the audience for like literally one or two questions. If anyone has like a burning question,
don't be shy.
For the author.
Yes. But my sister, the way was
paved.
A house was built. I love him and I love you. So means
Pumza, what?
No, you can't love him.
About the paving, what's the comment?
With the paving, I actually didn't look at it. I did not look at it like that. As if, he says, I don't want you coming back again, or I don't want. But I just, because I think I wanted to show how their, the relationship has grown. And, they are at a space where they're comfortable enough to hook each other up. So I think that's what I wanted to come across. Not the other one.
We have three questions. Can we have your question, my sister? Okay.
To everyone, Betty said,
We'll repeat your question. It's fine, my sister. Is it the unspoken truth, baby? Oh, okay, okay.
She's also an author of the Harvard Wife.
Okay.
So what I'm asking, is that Thando was selfish. Uh-huh. In the sense that she really dragged on, like, there was that when she was chosen,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and then you say, I forgive you, but then I'm going to punish you. Like, I feel like she didn't go back to you because she wanted it to work,
yeah.
but she was like, I want you to know, Uti, you can't have him, and mm-hmm. still you can't have it with me as well. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah.
Can I just interject? Yes. So I find that's an interesting interpretation, because mm-hmm. when I was reading that, I felt like she was hurt.
Yeah.
Why must she pretend that just
yeah.
because she's forgiven him, everything has
yeah.
ended? Why is that the expectation? I've forgiven you doesn't erase what you've
yeah.
done to me, right?
Yeah.
And even if I remind you, also that you did it. Even if I didn't remind you, it doesn't change. And also, why is the onus on me as the offended party to make things easier for you? I've miscarried my
yes.
child because of what you've done, right? I am extending grace. I'm
yes.
saying I forgive you. I'm allowing us to work on this. Let me feel what I'm feeling. Maybe some days in Yafuga and I see you and Tobani again. Like, so what I'm saying to you is, for me, it challenged my ideas about forgiveness. Because
yeah.
we have this idea that when someone does something to you, right, you and you say you forgive them, you're no longer allowed to feel your emotions about what has happened, right?
Yeah.
Because forgiveness must be this all-encompassing, total thing. I've forgiven you,
it's
therefore we are never allowed to speak about the ways in which you've harmed me.
Yeah.
But you've still harmed me. And, like, you are further harming
me
by
hurt.
Not allowing me to feel what I'm feeling. Maybe she was, maybe she was acting out. But she was experiencing her things, guys. Her baby had died. So, Nina Benfun was like, okay, babes, it's okay.
Okay.
Let's calm down.
No, so what I'm saying is, I'm disputing that idea of forgiveness. That forgiveness means to forget. That's what I'm disputing. I'm saying, why should it be? But you still harmed me. Like,
okay.
I guys, no, Rihanna, no. If I forget, Zompinda. I want to dispute that because this is what white people do with race, right? They
yeah.
say, I get it, you guys said you forgave us.
Yeah, so
why do you still remind us that black people have difficult
yes.
times, that apartheid happened to them? I get it, you forgive them. Why are you reminding your white neighbor that they have your land? I get it, you forgive them.
Okay.
Okay. They drink the wine to me.
Okay. There was a question at the back. We can continue
okay.
these engagements after the recording.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I have a question and a compliment, I guess.
Yes.
Firstly, I loved reading all of
your books. Mm-hmm.
You are
doing excellent.
Yes. Yes, I did. Yes.
How do you channel your emotions so effectively and so beautifully?
Yes.
And at some point that she was so subdued. She was, I forgive you. Mm. Now I'm getting into this. Go back
and you're stubborn.
Yeah. You know, when I write, I can't explain, you know, babes, where how it translates to, you know, from my mind to, I just write as I'm feeling it. And when I feel it, then I will start writing. And it doesn't matter where I'm at. I could be sitting in front of the TV. I've become antisocial. I think my family is complaining. My husband, you know, I think he was only happy when he saw the books. Like, oh, that's what you've been doing. But when my friends are complaining as well at work. Let's not quote the work. So it's. It takes a lot as well from me, you know, however emotional the scene is or however sexy the scene is or however, because most of my books as well, there's a lot of people go through emotions as well. And I love tapping into that. You know, I remember in this, the sequel to this, there's a scene where I wrote and I felt it. I was crying and my friend came over and said, like, why are you crying? I'm like, and I was literally like, you know, the ugly cry because I felt it. So that's how I write. I need to feel it. If I don't feel it, then I don't write it. I must, if I'm writing about a heartbreak, I must feel the heartbreak. If, you know, I'm writing about being happy, I must be happy. If I'm writing about the sexual thing, I must feel that.
I think the related question to this is, you obviously have decided to go the self-publishing route, right?
Yes.
Why did you decide to go the self-publishing route?
I think for me it was not, I think from she self-published her book and she made it look so easy. I was like, oh, and she didn't tell me anything about the selling part, but you know, the writing and the printing it and having it out there was like relatively easy. It's like, oh, okay, I can do this. And you know, when I read, you know, the things, the criteria of what the publishers want you to meet, I was like, I don't fall under there. I don't think they're going to take me. But I mustn't lie, I haven't tried any publishing companies. I just wanted to do it myself and see how far I can go, because it's not just about writing also. It's becoming a business for me and a brand and something that I would like to grow, you know, further into. So it's, I just want to see how it goes when I do it myself.
Okay.
That's really inspiring. I think I speak on behalf of this whole room that's gathered here when I say that this book was such an amazing read for so many reasons. I think that so many women can relate to the book, to the themes in the book. I think your book asked us some real questions that we sort of had to work through ourselves about sexuality, our attitudes to relationships, to friendships, to sex, to reading about sex, to having sex. So some people read the book.
Have sex, boo babes, have sex.
See your GP face. but I think that we're also really inspired. I think it's beautiful to see black women writing these kind of stories that you sit and you read as a black woman and you're snapping your fingers or you burn your rice. I just want to commend you on doing that. I think that there's a bravery in writing our stories, as uncomfortable as it can be, you know. There's a bravery in publishing our own stories and not always waiting for a white publishing house to give you the strength to do it. That our stories have meaning, they have weight. We're going to support each other. And I think that this is an encouragement to do that, right? There's a whole room full of black women who read your books and had deep feelings about the characters, the themes. The questions asked in the book is a testament to that, you know. So we just want to congratulate you from the Cheeky Natives.
So at the Cheeky Natives, you know, you go to a movie and they're like, five stars this movie or five popcorn. Amen. Well, now we don't play games. We do serious things, right?
Yeah, serious
so
podcast.
We run a land committee, and we sit, we deliberate after reading books, you know. We have a whole discussion. We're like, okay, my sister, this is the book, the language, the in advantage because Nali is sexy. So we're like, oh, we're like, Goshen, we give people land because, you know, when the land comes,
yeah,
does come to the chicken eaters, the Tausana La Deep of Titan. So, there's a lot of, you know, scenes in the book that sort of allude to, like, beachy vibes.
Mm.
You like to look into the ocean.
Ocean,
you know,
ocean
when Bongane and Gobane reunite,
yeah,
you know. Mm. Mm. So we thought, oh, Eastern Cape there, we'll go
la
there
la
in the Eastern Cape.
Home.
And we'll give you some lehats in the Eastern Cape.
I'm so happy.
We're going to have the portion of land called Gunubi.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, we'll take it. We give it to you.
Finally.
I'm moving on up.
So when the land comes,
I just
call us, girl. We have your title deed.
Oh my word.
We are keeping it safe at the Cheeky Natives Land
so
Committee.
I'm so happy.
As the conveners of land.
Yes.
We are here for you. We are here to give you to
my
give you this land. There you go. So we just want to say a big thank you, not only to Wupumza, but to this amazing crowd that's gathered.
A very engaging audience.
At
this is by far the most engaged audience we've
no.
had. So give us a big
You know, we're even considering giving them some land as well. we just want to... Just a few things, a few formalities. So where can people get your book, Pumza, because you're self-published?
They can contact me on Twitter, Pumza_Shabangu, and on Facebook, Pumza Shabangu, or my number. I can give out my number.
You can.
Give it.
1569-8489. They can come here at Bridge Books.
Mm-hmm.
Tembo always has copies of my book.
Yes.
There are quite a few now bookstores that have my books. A few exclusive books around Gauteng that have, and bargain stores also have my book. So if you go to any bargain bookstore and you can request the book, they will order it for you. So yeah.
And if you come to Bridge Books,
yes,
you can get a 10% discount with a voucher called Cheeky.
Wow.
So,
yes,
you know, because we celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah. So please don't be asking. We say this on every episode because people refuse to behave well on,
yes,
social media. Please do not ask the author for a free copy.
No, no PDF.
Or a PDF. Or don't force a copy of your friend's book at work.
This
we see you, Agents of Darkness. Enemies of progress. We see you, rebuke you, stop this thing.
So, yeah, to say just from us, the Cheeky Natives, thank,
yes,
you really
thank
for
you
shifting
for
us in our seats,
yeah,
and for writing really like what are necessary conversation, but writing them in a way that is humanizing. You know,
thank
so thank you.
You
very much.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And we hope to have you when we talk about Ryan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Till
next
so
time. Goodbye.
Bye.